Welcome back to our program. We're broadcasting, of course, from the Aquarius Resort, and we're on the beautiful Colorado River. And, of course, it's the UFO Congress, an international film festival. Fate Magazine is here, and Rosemary Ellen Guiley is a writer for Fate and many other books as well, and magazines and everything. No, you don't write for other magazines, do you? Or do you?
I do. I write for Taps Para Magazine. I have a column called Rosemary's Baby. That's the Ghost Researchers Paranormal Investigation. And I'm also an associate editor for the Journal of Abduction and Counter Research.
Oh, well, I'm impressed. Rosemary's Baby, I like that. That's good.
It's not my idea.
Playing on the words that the paranormal is your baby.
It certainly is.
Yeah. So what is happening in the world of paranormal activity? You're always up to something. I know you got a couple of TV things coming up.
I do. I was on the Travel Channel in the fall on a documentary on witchcraft in Salem. And I have two docudramas coming up on the Sci-Fi Channel this year. One is called Children of the Grave. It's about children ghosts that haunt an abandoned orphanage.
And where is this?
In the Midwest.
Okay.
I'm going to be a little bit secretive.
Okay.
And the other is a famous possession case, very famous possession case. The docudrama is called The Possessed. And that will be out later this year. And then we're filming this spring for a third show.
Oh, really?
This is with the Booth Brothers Spook TV Productions.
Uh-huh.
And I'm part of the League of Paranormal Gentlemen, which I'm the only female member of a top-notch investigation team.
Well, is there some product out there with that group that I could see someplace, or is this going to be the first venture?
Actually, the Children of the Grave will be the first.
Uh-huh.
They got the idea for this last fall based on the success of their first docudrama on Waverly Hills Sanatorium, which is quite haunted. That's in Louisville, Kentucky, and that was called Spook, the Ghosts of Waverly Hills. And I'm continuing my research into shadow people, investigating the connection between shadow people and extraterrestrials. And I'm also following the Stephenville case. I'm working now with a man who is being abducted by the beings who have been flying over Stephenville. And we have not yet done a regression. When I get back home in about a week, we'll be putting together regression. But he has been having nightly experiences of being in the craft.
Do you do hypnotherapy yourself?
I'm not a hypnotherapist myself, but I will work with a hypnotherapist.
Okay.
And be part of the interviewing process. We'll be doing that on video camera.
You still live in Baltimore, right?
I do. I live right outside of Baltimore.
Okay. And you've got a lot of other things planned as far as personal appearances. I know. Where are you going next? You're always busy. So.
I am indeed, and Fate keeps me pretty busy too. My next conference is another one for Fate. It's the Science and Consciousness Conference in Santa Fe. I go every year. There's a biennial conference on consciousness in Tucson this year. I'll be attending that.
And you
England.
You spent Christmas, I think, in Tucson.
I did. That was more R&R, although I did some haunting work there. I got down to Tombstone, did some ghost research, went around the Tucson area. That was quite nice.
And you're going to England when?
I'm going to England in late April. I'm going to be there for about 3 weeks. I like to get to England once a year, do some research. Sometimes I do speaking engagements. It's mostly research this trip. I'm going to be attending the May Day ceremonies in Padstow and Cornwall.
Now, what's so special about that?
They are world famous. It's the annual May Day celebrations. It's a pagan festival. The 1st of May was one of the early summer festivals from pre-Christian times. Mm-hmm. And it's a fertility festival. So there's a lot of dancing and celebration, singing, fertility, symbolism, and that sort of thing. Padstow is one of the places where the old rites are still done. They have parades, costumes, and they're famous around the world. I've always wanted to go, and this year I have the opportunity to go. And then I'm going to be doing some research in Cornwall for fairy haunts. I'm doing another book on fairies. I will be visiting the old Arthurian sites.
We'll go into more of what you're doing there, but you got my attention. Fairies. You've done research on fairies. You've written a book on fairies.
Yes, I have a book called Fairy Magic.
You've got so many books out. I can't keep track of it.
31 and counting, Jerry.
Yeah, I know. That one got by me. Now tell me a little bit. What's the special? How does one get interested in writing about? We're talking about Tinkerbell here, huh?
Well, actually more than Tinkerbell. People think of Tinkerbell when they think of fairies, but. That was really kind of an artist's representation.
Right.
Fairies are nature spirits. They're tied to the elemental world. They're a race of beings all of their own. I think they live in an interdimensional reality that's very closely connected with the Earth. And they have a lot of similarities to ETs in a lot of ways.
Yeah, well, I started to say, how do we differentiate these different entities in different places? What makes it a... somebody just tunes in is going to wonder, what in the world is he asking about? What makes a fairy?
Well, actually, several hundred years ago, people would have been likely to describe ETs as fairies because that was what they knew. That was the world they knew. And our horizons have expanded since then.
You and I have talked about it. A lot of these medieval stories probably have some sort of ET connection, in my opinion, and
we
seem to agree to a certain extent.
I do. I think that it gets very difficult to differentiate types of beings in terms of where they come from, who they are, what they are. People have had core experiences with otherworldly entities since ancient times, and they describe them in terms they can understand.
Now, when we talk about the fairy beings, we're talking about basically something about the size of the little grays, or are they all different sizes, or what?
They're all different sizes, and the most common description is of a person about the size of a gray, anywhere from about 3 to 4 feet tall, sometimes up to 5. Many times they look like little people. They're very human-like in their appearance. They might be wearing clothing. They might look very much like a piece of nature, like literally made out of twigs and leaves and things like that. Sometimes they're described as balls of light, pillars of light. Some of them can be quite large.
In other words, they look almost real, but there might be a glow to them or something.
There's something strange about them. Their appearance is... they don't look like just little humans. There's something otherworldly about it.
Okay, yeah.
And
charisma gone wild. I mean,
they pop out of the environment. In fairy lore, the fairies will let you see them if they want. Otherwise, they're invisible. So you
wrote a book about it, so were you able to communicate with fairies?
Well, in fact, that's what the book is about, because I had a number of fairy experiences myself.
Now, how does one go about having one of these fairy experiences?
I mean, usually they're spontaneous, but I think that once we tune into the fairy kingdom, we can cultivate a spiritual and mental attunement with that to invite communication. And it's much the same way that you might try to tune into angels, expanding consciousness, meditation, having a respectful attitude toward nature, and certainly who the fairies are. The fairies are like a lot of otherworldly beings. They know what our intentions are. And people who have an honest intent about wanting to have a relationship or to understand, to know, to pursue knowledge, are benevolent in intention.
How did you go about
they respond to
contact?
That.
I mean, did you show up where fairies have been reported, or did they come to you in Baltimore, or what?
Well, I had some spontaneous experiences that I didn't expect, and then some of them I went out hoping to have experiences with fairies. I used to live in Connecticut, and I had a home in the woods. And I had spontaneous experiences where the fairies manifested as balls of light that moved around in the woods, and I could sense intelligence to them, and intelligence that was responsive to me. Were they genuinely fairies? I can't prove one way or the other. It's just intuitively that's what they seem to me.
These lights might be fairies. Would they be somewhat like little orbs?
Yes, and they varied.
I remember one time up in Eureka Springs, you went out to look at some orbs one night. So you're interested in that, too. So
yes, and that was a disappointing night, I must say, the orb night in Eureka. Bigger than what we might call orbs, in paranormal investigation, the orbs are usually small. They're maybe about the size of a baseball when people see them, but these would be much bigger and also expanding and contracting and also extending into little pillars. I had other experiences where I had clairvoyant sightings of little beings, little human-like beings that would pop out of trees, come up out of the ground, and telepathically communicate.
What was happening there?
Well, one of those experiences that I write about in the book, I was at the Roman ruins of a dream temple in England, very near the Welsh border, and I was meditating by an oak tree, just trying to tune into the area, because
yes,
the spirit of the land was very, you could feel the spirit of the land there. And while I was meditating, I had the impression that something had come to visit me, and when I opened my eyes, I could see this little man, about 3 feet tall, and dressed in like a plaid shirt and trousers, had a little red cap on, which is very characteristic of fairies, the red cap. And it was like he just
you're
wanted...
You're not talking about a baseball cap, you're talking about a medieval type cap.
Yeah, like a little felt, like sort of like a little tam.
Right.
And I had the impression that he was interested in me and what I was doing, but he wanted me to know that I was there, like he was just kind of checking in. And it was very brief. After he made himself known, then he disappeared down the tree roots, and that was it. It was a very quick experience, like a lot of these are.
Well, what you know, you've done some things on the shadow people now.
Yes.
A lot of that. Tell me a little bit more about these shadow people. I'm kind of interested in that subject, and I'm sure our listeners are.
Shadow people are very common experience. They are dark, silhouetted figures. Most of them come and stand by the bed while you're sleeping, and you wake up and find a tall, very solid silhouette of what appears to be a man wearing a coat and maybe a hat, very close to the bed or in a corner of the room. No facial features, but you know it's watching you. People are almost always terrified when they see these figures.
Yeah, that
because
would be spooky,
they,
especially in your bedroom.
And the figures sort of emanate an aura of malevolence a lot. Sometimes the figures will come very close to the bed, maybe sit on the bed, but they block light. They seem to have solid mass, but then they will disappear through walls. They will vanish into thin air. They will go up through the ceiling. Nobody.
Anyone ever been injured by shadow people?
I don't have any cases of injury. I have cases where people say that they've been, they felt like they were going to be attacked, or they felt like they were going to be grabbed. I have, I've collected over 400 cases, and I have two where the individuals say that they thought the shadow person was going to poison them by breathing on them. And that's found in vampire folklore as well, the vampire who poisons by breath.
We've talked about vampires before in previous shows. The shadow people, what do you make of that? Are they demons, other multi-dimensional? You don't know, really, I guess.
Well, I've come to a working hypothesis on that. And yes, people do tend to explain them as ghosts, as demons, malevolent entities, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that shadow people are an interdimensional being. They may even be artificial intelligence, but they seem to have a purpose of observing us and watching us. So they're on a mission. They want to know something about us, but they don't want us to know about them. And I think that they deliberately make themselves scary so that we don't ask questions about them. Usually when we see them, they vanish. So they really don't want us to know. We can't follow them. We don't know what they're up to. But I have found that many experiencers of shadow people are also ET experiencers. So I've started exploring the ET connection. Now, people don't have ET experiences like contact or visitations or abductions at the same time that they have shadow people experiences, but they have they are experiencers of both.
The same thing happens, same event happens to the same person.
And because they seem to watch us, and they want to come while we're in different states of consciousness other than waking. We're either falling asleep or we're deeply asleep. So there's something about our sleeping consciousness that I feel may give them access to us, to our consciousness, the thoughts in our heads. What if they're doing some kind of programming? What if they are some sort of artificial intelligence used by ultra-terrestrials or extraterrestrials to find out things about us or to program some of our thoughts and emotions that are they're part of the overall ET program. It's a possibility.
Have you had a shadow person experience?
I have not had the bedside visitor. They do lurk about in other places as well. Sometimes people confuse them with dark ghosts. I think they will often frequent haunted places because it's a way of camouflage. And I have seen shadow people that I that moved, that interacted with me, that were intelligent, that I knew that I was being tracked and followed. And I also feel that they are watching, they watch what people know about them. And so when people do research on them, I think we're under observation.
Well, I started to say, they probably would know about you. 31 books, huh?
31 indeed.
What's your latest one?
My latest one is a new edition of the Encyclopedia of Ghosts and Spirits, which came out last fall. And I have...
You have a new edition. That's the one that came out last fall, right?
Yes, last fall. That's a third edition.
Because we've talked about that book before.
It's
been
in print since 1992.
Yeah, we'll come back and find out a little bit more about that. Rosemary Ellen Guiley is going to stay by us here for another 15-minute segment in a moment. I'd like to take an opportunity to talk to you about really the number one leader in media for UFO and conspiracy videos in the world, and that's UFOTV.com. I can't urge you enough to go over there and take a look at this website. You'll be rewarded handsomely for it. If you're interested in what we're doing here at the Congress, here in Laughlin at the UFO Congress, you simply go over to UFOTV.com, and you'll see a downloadable program there, which, guess what, it's on their e-books. It is actually the official program of the UFO Congress. So you can download that and print it out, and you'll have your own copy. You don't have to come all the way to Laughlin to get it. They have a lot of free stickers over there as well, and an e-book of the month that's free. And when it comes to videos, documentaries from conspiracy and UFO subjects, no one in the world can top UFOTV.com with the selection. They have even a couple of other good things I want to talk to you a little bit later on the next break about, and that's a free movie. In fact, we have three free movies available right now for download at UFOTV.com. Check it out. You'll be glad you did. If you're into UFO and conspiracy videos, this is a place to go. UFOTV.com. We are here at the UFO Congress. Rosemary Ellen Guiley is our guest, and we'll get back to UFOs in a moment. She's here with Fate Magazine. But we want to talk about this new encyclopedia you have out. It's a version of the old one, right?
Well, every so often I update encyclopedias with a new edition, and it's literally the equivalent of writing a whole new book, because I add about 70,000, 80,000 words, and that's about the length of the average book.
Yeah.
So,
how big is this book?
Well, it's gotten so big that the publisher had to go to a thinner paper just to keep it from being a monster. And I'm joking that for the next edition, I'm going to be on Bible paper. Very, very thin.
Well, you are capable of writing the Bible for the paranormal, I think. You've been doing this for a while.
Well, you know, Jerry, what I'm really interested in is human consciousness and the way our consciousness interacts with the paranormal, our otherworldly experiences, and what that says about our consciousness, our ability to access other realms, and what that means about our evolution as a species and our place in the scheme of things. And the paranormal, the fairies, the angels, the extraterrestrials, even the dark side, like the demons and the vampires, all of those things fit together in the big picture. So that's what I'm exploring, the big picture and how everything fits together.
Do you think some of these things are manufactured by our own inner self?
I do believe that we are very much a part of all of our experiences, that we can't help but have a projection that creates or colors the experience. we have to have a framework for relating to the experience. Otherwise, there's no way for our brain to accommodate it, to take it in, to bring it into our what we know from memory and from learning. So we need a context, a framework. And I do think that from our own consciousness, we project something out. And I think that's one of the reasons why possibly these core experiences remain the same but have different descriptions, like the fairy experience, for example, the abducting fairy, the abducting ET, the poisonous shadow person, the poisonous vampire, the demon, which is the, you know, the dark side of things.
We have
negative ETs and benevolent ETs that are very angelic-like. And so what separates an angel, for example, from a benevolent ET if they come in the same guise and the same appearance with the same offering of information and healing and spiritual enlightenment? It becomes a subjective judgment call, and you're going to make that judgment call based on your own gut feeling and the context of your time and history and your culture.
Now, what about intergalactic travel and extraterrestrials? You think that's something, too, or are we talking about something more interdimensional here? I mean, how do you feel about the traditional ET and UFO vision?
I think that it's certainly plausible to me that there are extraterrestrials who have mastered the bending of time and space, who can literally travel great distances in a very short amount of time, perhaps even instantly. I think my personal feeling is I think that the bulk of our experiences are probably interdimensional rather than sheer geography of space.
Mm-hmm.
And that we may perceive beings as extraterrestrial when actually they're really interdimensional. We don't really know enough yet. But there does seem to be a hybrid program going on. I think we've accumulated ample experiential evidence of that, that there are some beings, whether they're ultra-terrestrials or extraterrestrials, who are engaging with us in some sort of genetic manipulation for some other kind, the creation of some other kind of race, which includes characteristics from us. My own personal feeling, I think we were seeded by other races anyway on this planet.
Right.
And I think that we've been monitored and
the ancient mysteries type thing.
Yes, I think we've been monitored and maybe coached along and manipulated, and things have bred into us and been bred out of us as part of that program.
So what's gotten your attention recently that really interests you? I know Stephenville, we talked a little bit about that. But,
I think the Stephenville case is very interesting because of the numbers of witnesses, the kinds of things they're seeing in the sky, the moving lights that seem to be forming three-dimensional symbols. That really piqued my interest because I'm very interested in information that's contained in symbols and the way symbols act on human consciousness. That's one of the reasons why I got into crop circle research years ago, because of these symbols that were being placed on the planet in a dramatic way to affect masses of people.
And your opinion about crop circles in general is what? Is it an ET art or a message or coming up from the underground? What's happening here?
There's certainly a purpose to it. And yes, there has been a lot of hoaxing. But even beyond that, I think that there's a purpose to the hoaxing even. I think that human beings have been getting their impulse, their inspiration from somewhere to put these things down.
Yeah, they're not easy to put
together. They are not easy, and in fact, I have been out in the fields. I have made crop circles, so I know what it's like.
Oh, how long does it take to build one?
It depends on how complicated they are, but two people can do a very nice design very quickly.
Oh, really? Where did you do yours at?
In England.
Okay. Well, that's fitting.
That was quite some time ago, but when all of the hoaxing exposés were happening in crop circles, I started to get to know some of the people who were covertly doing it. I wanted to know my own personal self. I wanted the personal experience of going out, not just interviewing these people, but I wanted to see it. I wanted to go out. I wanted to see them do it. Mm-hmm. I wanted to do it myself, so I knew what it was like, and I did. To me, that doesn't negate the importance of the crop circles. People say, well, if they're made by people, then we have to ignore them. They're fake. We don't have the same geophysical properties than the unexplained or quote-unquote genuine crop circles. To me, they're all genuine. Well, and you cannot help but have a change in your environment when you interact your consciousness with the field consciousness of the planet and the inspiration that you got from somewhere, from spirit, from higher beings, whatever, to put this down in the field. It creates a field of energy that's going to impact the environment. So I think we are very much a part of the phenomenon, and we should be.
You're quite the hands-on person. Get out here and build crop circles. I know you spent nights in haunted houses and challenged ghosts firsthand. And ever run across a real vampire?
I do believe in real vampires, yes, but not the Count Dracula kind.
Okay. We haven't run across a guy in a cape yet.
Only on Halloween. Well, there are living people who call themselves vampires. They're really more energy vampires than blood drinkers. I've met both kinds, the Sang, the blood drinkers, and the Psi vampires, or psychic vampires. I have also encountered in the course
of... You hang out with a lot of weird people, Rosemary.
I have a very strange Rolodex. But in the course of my paranormal investigations of haunted places, I've encountered what I feel are non-human entities that are vampiric in nature. That is, they suck something off the living. And that's what a vampire does. Vampire,
yes,
takes the energy and the life force. So in that sense, yes, vampires are very real. But the Anne Rice vampires, I think, are fiction. They're not glamorous, beautiful people who live forever.
So you don't run around graveyards with a wooden stake?
Not yet. I've run around graveyards, however.
Oh, really?
Well, many of them are haunted. People think that all graveyards are very haunted, but actually some of them are. But as a whole, graveyards are not as active as buildings, homes, places where life happened, not death.
Yeah, we've talked about that in one show some time back, but there are ghosts that hang around graveyards, though, huh?
I think so. Many of these, I think, are what we would call confused or unhappy souls, that they didn't make the complete transition. Maybe they don't even know they're dead, or they've got unfinished business, and so they're lingering around the last place that the body went.
You, as a ghost lady, you've run across the same ghost before? I mean, you know, you go out there and try to communicate with these things. Have you run across the same entity someplace?
Yes, it is possible, because in some haunted locations we have what are called imprint ghosts.
Okay.
It's like a...
Tell me about that.
An imprint ghost really doesn't have a locus of intelligence to it. It's like a drawing imprinted in space. And it can move around and do certain things, but it's always like on a loop or a track. It doesn't really have an intelligence. It's like a psychic recording. And it is possible to encounter those repeatedly if you go back to the same haunted location. It's like the ghost that always goes up the same staircase, or the ghost that always goes down the hallway.
Yeah, it seems like they're trapped someplace.
And we call them residual ghosts, imprints. They're not really an intelligence present. It's like a shell energy. That's a good way of describing it, a shell energy that's left behind, like leaving a memory of yourself behind.
Everyone that passes away, are they come back as ghosts, or just a certain, I mean, if that were true, we'd have a world full of ghosts, which we do now that I think about
it. Well, actually, I think there isn't a square millimeter on this planet that's not haunted, because...
Oh, really?
I think that the living leave something behind. Every living thing on this planet leaves an imprint of itself behind. And if we could tune into all of those imprints, we would not be able to occupy. We would be pushed right out of our psychic space. So we seem to tune into things that are the strongest. I think they can be magnified by earth energy, by events in history, things that we resonate with. We resonate with certain periods in history because dramatic things happen, violent things happen.
Like the Civil War.
Like the Civil War. We have a romance with certain periods like Victorian times or the medieval times. And so our consciousness is prepared to experience that in some way, or desires an experience with that.
And what is your fascination? What period?
Well, I definitely like the, actually it would be called the late Middle Ages to the Renaissance. I was always very drawn to the Inquisition and the politics that happened, the mass executions. They certainly left a psychic scar, just like the Civil War left a psychic scar here in America. It was a very turbulent time.
In turbulent times and times of violence, do you think that's more likely to leave more ghosts behind or memories or something, whatever you want to call this, the imprints?
I do think that violence has an impact because many of our hauntings have violent histories attached to them. There's something about unhappy, violent, angry ends of life that smack the psychic ether with a ghost or an imprint or something left behind that's interactive that we can relate to.
We're at a UFO conference. We only got a minute or so left. You still interested in UFOs?
Oh, very much, Jerry. And I've always been interested, ever since I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And I think that actually ufology is the cutting edge frontier where a lot of these questions about ourselves, our consciousness, our spiritual evolution, they're all going to come together in ufology.
We'll be looking for you on television in these different series you've mentioned. Anything with a date on it yet?
We're looking at May for one of the docudramas, and June is going to be the DVD release of the second one, and I don't know the air date for that yet.
Okay, so
The Possessed will be out in June. Children of the Grave will be airing in May.
And you're working on another book, probably.
Jerry, I'm always working on books. My Shadow People book is well underway. That's going to be
that'll probably be the coming.
That'll be coming out later this year. Actually, in March, I have a young adult book on ghosts coming out.
Oh, really? Juvenile fiction?
This is for young adult. It's grade 6 through 12. Mm-hmm. Nonfiction paranormal. I'm actually the consulting editor on the series. I'm very excited about that. We're rolling out with 17 books, and I'm writing 5 of them, and I've hired writers to do the rest. I'm writing ghosts. I will have Vampires and Witches out at the end of the year, a new edition of the Encyclopedia of Witches and Witchcraft out at the end of the year, and I'm at work on a brand new encyclopedia, a brand new topic.
She's getting to the biblical paper fast.
But I'm not talking about the topic yet because I'm not far enough into it.
Rosemary, it's always a pleasure to have you on.
Jerry, it's great. Thank you.
Okay. And our in-studio producer is Shanina Johnson, and our web producer is Jane Swartley. And on behalf of our advertising partner, our sponsor, UFOTV.com, by the way, this is the best place to get the best in serious UFO and conspiracy documentaries. You can either get them as a stream, or you can download them on the computer, or you can order them and they'll deliver them to you, including free ground shipping with UPS in the U.S. And actually, if you push them, they'll pay the freight to Hawaii, Alaska, and Canada. And you get the shipping, really, the next day you'll get it, really. UFOTV.com. Until next time, this is Jerry Pippin. Cheers.